At Geico, you have a choice of ways you could save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online at geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Number five. So Mike Tomlin's 49 years old. While most of us in the football viewing audience were riveted by the Chargers and Raiders game, which actually ended up going to overtime after everyone was joking, wouldn't it be funny if they all just took a knee and tied and then they both made the playoffs and the Steelers didn't? They were showing actual Steelers fans in the stadium too. Do you know who didn't quite make it to Sunday nights to the overtime?
No, who?
Steelers coach Mike Tomlin.
Oh. End of it, I dozed off. I knew I had a work day waiting on me, or I assumed that I had a work day waiting on me. I think at one point Oakland was up by 15, and that number made you somewhat comfortable. I'm probably better off not having watched it. So it's probably not as exciting of a description as you would have hoped.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin's 49. I can really relate to this, Joe.
I respect that. Look, I'll be straight up. You know, I refuse to be one of these people in the business that wants you to believe that I'm watching all the things. Right? There's no humanly like this. It's not humanly possible to watch all the sports. Right? It's just not. And we're old. So last night, watching the national championship game, after a half of what we could describe as boring football, and don't give me this defensive struggle and you all just don't appreciate defensive football. No. That just wasn't a good game in the first half. And after seeing enough of the third quarter, I thought to myself, well, I know how this is going to end, and I don't really feel like staying up late, especially with what's going on at my house. I don't really feel like watching Nick Saban drag another national championship off of some poor coach's team that really had their hypes, you know, their hopes and everything else set up for it. So I went to bed. So consider me surprised that when I woke up this morning, I grabbed my phone and I see the ESPN notification that Georgia won it. I went, oh, thankfully we live in 2022 and I can just go back on the internet and watch the last 8 minutes of that football game, which, Chilio, I think you watched in real time. It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, listen, I was surprised as anybody. I fell asleep in the middle of the second quarter, and Stetson Bennett just looked like he was completely overmatched. And sure enough, I wake up, and he's making some hits, some deep shots, really was composed, didn't let his performance from the SEC championship game get in the way of his performance last night in Indianapolis. So hats off to Georgia, Stetson Bennett, the fourth. Did not beat Alabama in the traditional way that you would normally see a team beat Alabama. And Georgia's defense, obviously, was excellent.
Next up.
Number four.
So the Carolina Hurricanes were supposed to play the Philadelphia Flyers tonight, but we got the announcement from the NHL last night that the game was postponed. The reason given by the NHL on the PR NHL Twitter account just reads like this. NHL announced today that due to COVID-related issues affecting the Philadelphia Flyers, tomorrow night's Carolina at Philadelphia game has been postponed. The new date for that game has yet to be determined. This is setting up for a pretty wild February since NHL players are not participating in the Winter Olympics, and they're going to use all those games that they missed back in December as a way to make up for those games. Anyway, so I'm thinking to myself, man, how bad does it have to be in Philadelphia for them not to play a hockey game? Because you'll remember, Gilio, the Carolina Hurricanes back in December were playing hockey games while a bunch of their guys were on the COVID protocol. I think they had 16 players at one point. They had to get a college goalie up. They had AHL players up. They still managed to play competitive hockey, even won a game. So what the hell's going on with the Flyers that they can't play a hockey game on a Tuesday night? Apparently nothing. The Philadelphia Flyers did not add anybody new to the COVID list. They actually got a guy off the COVID list. And as of earlier today, they had 21 guys dressed for practice. 21, 16. 21 is more than 16,
practiced.
Right?
And they practiced. Yeah.
And they practiced. 21's more than 16, right? I'm not doing fuzzy math. Don't look up.
No.
All right, I was just double checking. So what the hell is going on? The Carolina Hurricanes were already in Philadelphia. Flight, hotel, meals. It ain't cheap. So why even post? Why even reschedule the game? As far as I'm concerned, you might as well hand Rod Brindamore the Holiday Bowl trophy right now. Just give him the win. Because there's no reason to reschedule this game. The Flyers could have played. They decided not to. I'd love to know what went through the NHL offices to get this game postponed. I've yet to see a definitive answer on this.
I think what Tom Dundon is doing behind the scenes, Joe, is he knows the real key to success in the NFL is that you only play once a week. So he's trying to make sure that no matter what happens, the Hurricanes only play once a week. So everyone tunes in, right? This is all a plot to sell Bally Sports subscriptions and cable subscriptions.
Has to be.
That's all this is.
Has to be.
Because if they only play once a week, you're going to be like, yeah, I'll watch that game or I'll go to that game.
Sure.
But if it's, you know, the normal three times a week, you're like, yeah, just catch them on Thursday.
Next up.
Number three.
So the Carolina Courage have been busy this week. Joining us from our podcast on the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, Courage on the Pitch, is Megan O'Keefe. Megan, how are you?
Hello, guys. Yes, I'm great. How are you?
Long time no talk. So let's actually get to the news of the day, where the Carolina Courage announced that defender Kelly Kurtz re-signed with a one-year contract with a year option. And then that follows up yesterday's news that, or over the weekend, where Lynn Williams was traded for, draft considerations in 2023. So what's the thought behind these moves this week?
Yeah, I mean, there's been tons of news coming out almost on a daily basis. But yes, news of the day in the past couple days, Kaylee Kurtz re-signing is massive. She has really made a name for herself last season, solidifying herself as a center back with our captain, Abby Ersig. So their partnership has just been really great to watch, and I'm excited for them coming into this next season. So that's definitely exciting news. But of course, can't not talk about the Lynn trade. And that was actually something that she had requested, because she, you know, she was ready for a new chapter, new challenges in her career. And she has a great partnership with Sam Mewis, who had also been traded to KC a couple weeks ago there. So she's definitely happy. I think that, you know, this is beneficial for all sides. We're so sad to see her leave. She was definitely a fan favorite and will always be part of the Courage family. Not to sound cheesy, but definitely bittersweet news there.
Megan O'Keefe joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. And Megan, talking about a new chapter, obviously Sean Nahas was within the organization and promoted last year. And how has the organization kind of, and how has the team kind of responded? Normally, you have to go outside, the club to go get a new coach and kind of start over, because that's what this feels like. It feels like the Courage are starting over.
Yeah, in a way, it's definitely a new chapter for the club and for the team. But Sean Nahas, I have just been so impressed and honestly inspired by him and what he's done with the team so far. I've definitely had a lot of chances to chat with him about his priorities, and he has always made it players first, whatever it is that they need. I mean, he stepped up in a really, sensitive time. And so that was really difficult to come in during that climate, but he stepped up massively and has continued to, just make it a point. He wants to empower these players, make sure they know they have a voice and they're supported and everything there. And like you said, sometimes you have to look outside of organizations to hire a new coach, but I think it was key that we brought him in, and he already had these relationships established with these players. They trust him. They know him. So it was really exciting news there during what was definitely a difficult time for the team.
Megan O'Keefe, Courage on the Pitch. You can check that out on the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Megan, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
It's the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. Let's get to the next one.
Number two.
So Georgia is your national champion. I don't want this to sound like I am taking away from Georgia's national championship. There's more to this story, and I know you referenced this when we talked to Ryan McGee in the last hour from ESPN. This is more about the Georgia program, Kirby Smart, the head coach, finally getting over on Nick Saban, and Georgia fans just being ecstatic for the first time in 41 years, the last time they won a national championship. However, This was a Georgia team that managed to get blown out in the SEC championship game in a surprise. And as we got to the championship game itself, the college football championship game itself, Georgia got to take advantage of Alabama's roster one by one starting to deplete with injuries, especially at the wide receiver position. So it's Nick Saban didn't somehow all of a sudden get out coached by Kirby Smart. I think Georgia just won a war of attrition, which is by nature football. There's something to be said for that. And this is also an Alabama team that wasn't exactly one of Nick Saban's best teams. This speaks to just how difficult it is to get over Nick Saban. And also, Nick Saban's not-so-great teams are still better than the majority of college football programs out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that last year's Alabama team in 2020 was Nick Saban's best team there. They were totally loaded. They were completely locked in during the pandemic, and they just crushed teams. I think this was always going to be, for Nick Saban, a rebuilding year, which is why you're going to see Alabama be the preseason number one next year, because he has a two-year cycle, is basically what he's done at Alabama. That being said, Joe, I disagree. I thought what Kirby Smart did was he went back, he looked at what happened in that SEC championship game. He made the necessary adjustments, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. I thought they completely neutralized Bryce Young. I was surprised in how Alabama's offense reacted to that. They tried to do a lot of, you know, sand the deck. They went side to side. And you can't do that, Danielson, against the defense with that type of speed. And I thought the one shot they took downfield was to Jameson Williams. And unfortunately, that's the play Williams gets hurt on. So to your point, yes, the injuries mattered. Alabama's also missing their top two cornerbacks. No doubt about that. But I think that the way that the SEC championship game played out, I thought Kirby Smart went to work. I thought he made the necessary adjustments. And I thought he had that team frothing and ready to play football. I really do. You know, there was a sequence there in the fourth quarter where they're just starting to run the football in Alabama, and you saw the one offensive lineman jump into the pile like the Kool-Aid guy. And you're like, whoa, what is going on right now? And that was Georgia beating Nick Saban, like an old-school Nick Saban, not the 2020 team that was flashy and threw the ball all over the place. This was truly our defense has – you know, 6-7 NFL guys on it, and your offense doesn't. And I was just impressed with the way that Smart, A, had his team ready to play, and B, Alabama just didn't. And I understand the injuries, I really do. But Alabama had no answers for what Georgia was doing on defense, and I thought that was telling for both Nick Saban and Bill O'Brien.
I'm with you to a point. About Nick, I agree that Kirby Smart had his guys ready to go. That's half the battle. I think Kirby Smart even referenced it after the game, talking about scars, right? And it wasn't just scars from the SEC championship game, the scars in general. Because this is a recent phenomenon between Alabama and Georgia. A lot of these guys have all been on the squad, right? So credit to Kirby Smart for having his guys ready to go. Nick Saban also had his guys ready to go. But drive stalled out in the first half because of things like drops, mistakes. That wasn't necessarily a coaching issue or whatnot. That was an execution issue. I don't necessarily know that a drop pass or whatnot is the reason why.
But they weren't wide open drops. That was a pressure burst pipe situation. The way that they were heating up Bryce Young, quite frankly, in a way that they couldn't in the SEC championship game. That's what I mean by the adjustments. They had no pressure on Bryce Young in Atlanta. In this game, Young didn't have time to think at all. He ran, his final rushing total was minus 43 yards. The way you beat Alabama, and you have to think of Georgia's defense like a traditional Alabama team, is to have a super performance by your quarterback. What did Bryce Young do in the SEC championship game? He won the Heisman Trophy. That's how he won the Heisman Trophy.
Because of that game.
And he did not look, and I get it. Jameson Williams didn't play in this game. John Menchie didn't play in this game. I get all of those things. You're telling me the tight end who's going to be in the NFL can't go? You're telling me the running back? you're telling me future... future New England Patriots Slade Bolden isn't good for a little hook and curl and a couple of catches and a little Julian Edelman magic? They got guys. You know, it's interesting to me, Joe. To me, the formula to beat Alabama is you got to have that quarterback and you got to get a freebie. You think about the way Georgia just beat them. No freebies. No wonky special teams plays. No, they had to pick six, which put it away, but it really wasn't instrumental to the win. And the quarterback, Stetson Bennett, was good. Made the plays when he had to. Kept his poise. Kept his composure. And
made two big throws.
Made two huge throws. But had the time to make those throws. And Georgia's receivers made the plays, and Alabama's didn't. Sometimes that's what football comes down to.
Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
All right, so the football season's over. The college football season's over. It's not like we even have recruiting day to look forward to because you have early signing period back on December 15th. So what do you do? How do you make good? Well, you start talking about next season within minutes of the national championship game being done. And you know who's going to get a lot of attention in the offseason, Julio?
NC State.
NC State's going to get a lot of attention. This is going to be an interesting offseason for Dave Doran, head football coach at NC State. Reason why is that we've spent the last two seasons talking about lack of respect. Remember? Now, I think we have discussed, and maybe people need a reminder, we can run Dave Doran through the fans later. And when he was talking about disrespect, who was he talking about, Julio?
He was talking about the ACC Network and ESPN when they do the run-up to their games. Because you got to remember, NC State played all of their games at night. And they sat in a hotel room and they watched these pregame shows and they heard him talk about, even, you know, in week 10, it was like, Sam Howell is a dark horse Heisman contender. I was like, what? You know, they were still talking about Carolina. They were talking about Wake Forest, which they should have been. They were spending a lot of time talking about Clemson not being good, even though Clemson wins seven in the last eight games of the season. So I think that's where the lack of respect came from. Not, you know, oh my gosh, what a Julio. I wonder if Joe Julio and Joe Ovius think NC State's going to win the game. You don't have to wonder. Just look at the video I posted that said NC State's going to win the game. This is not a mystery.
I was going to say, we do what's on Julio's card all the time. Like, you make it abundantly clear who you think is going to win games. But I also, you're right in that it's the ACC Network and they're watching those pregame shows. Yeah. But it was specific to North Carolina.
Right.
I do think there's an attitude, one that I agree with, where NC State has been a slow build, where they've tried to develop a program. If you want to focus on the last 5 years, let's throw the first years for Dave Doran out the window. Let's focus on building the program to where he wanted and the last 5 years being productive, okay? Mac Brown comes in, starts getting the recruits. Mac Brown's a charismatic personality in coaching. Cameras love him. People love talking to him. It's an easy sell. And we saw
with a high profile quarterback who won his first two games in dramatic fashion. Let's not forget that either.
So North Carolina was the perfect type of team. The head coach, the school itself, and the hotshot quarterback.
The brand itself too.
Right. That's what I mean by the school.
Yeah.
So all of those things combined for a perfect concoction of hype in the offseason, leading to a top 10 preseason ranking. Of course, we know the rest of the story. Didn't end well for North Carolina. Now this offseason is going to be NC State getting the attention. Couple things. NC State's not going to be a preseason top 10 for a variety of reasons. The biggest ones being that they're the opposite of what got North Carolina in the preseason top 10. Meaning, Dave Doran, and I don't think I'm going to ruffle any feathers over there, is not a charismatic, media-savvy guy in the same way that Mac Brown is. I'm not saying anything that should be insulting over on Western Boulevard. Dave Doran, nice guy, but he doesn't sizzle on the camera the way that Mac Brown seems to do that. That's number one. Number two, Devin Leary. What's the biggest knock on Devin Leary, who put up good numbers this year, Julio?
He doesn't run.
Ding, 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 ding. So Devin Leary is not going to get the offseason hype. Number three, the brand. The NC State brand is not the same as the North Carolina brand, for whatever it's worth, okay? And North Carolina was able to spin a loss in the Orange Bowl with potential, all right? NC State is going to be selling their preseason hype based on all the people they're actually bringing back. All of this is to say, NC State and North Carolina being preseason darlings, so to speak, are not identical. One instance is based around who you got in terms of media, who the camera likes, and brand. The other is based on when you look on paper, you're an AP voter, Julio. You know how this goes when you're putting a preseason top 10 together or a preseason top 25. What do voters typically look for when they get outside the CFP contenders?
Oh, it's returning starter, schedule, quarterback, those type of things.
And those are the types of things that NC State has going in their favor.
Yeah.
So I'm here for the delicious schadenfreude that's about to take place next season. Because after this past season where everybody enjoyed North Carolina going through it with a 6-7 year, we're going to see a lot of eyes on NC State going, oh, so you really had fun at North Carolina's expense last year. Got it. It would be a shame if you go into the season with lots of hype and then all of a sudden it doesn't work out for you. That's what we're set up for in college football locally next year.